This is the Midday 180, queued up by Angeli's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
Just like that, the second hour is here. Midday 180, queued up by Angeli's Barbecue, and the crew is all here. We are together this week and next week before the second round of furloughs hits the Midday 180 alongside Chad Withrow in Mount Juliet. Paul Kuharsky in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Nashville, or in Murfreesboro, looking at David Reed in Nashville. He's wearing the Angeli's Barbecue hat. I wish I was in Nashville with you, Reed. We were discussing that during the break. We all wish to be back in studio and filming part two of Paul Kuharsky massaging David Reed's beard for charity. We can't wait for that to happen again. Coming up at 11:15,
sounds good.
Doug Matthews is on the show today. He'll join us for a couple of segments. We'll talk the latest SEC return to play scenarios, college football chatter as well. A lot to get to there. Greg Cosell today at 12:15, and a little bit later in the show, primary complaint presented by the Dr. Gill Center. So, in reading a lot about and seeing a lot of Twitter chatter about the MLB and how, can you believe if Major League Baseball bickers over money and they can't come up with a half season, what this will do to the sport? You know, the people that swore off baseball during the strike, if you thought that was bad, just wait until they refuse to play this summer. But with the fact that, here's my question, with the fact that there will be no fans in attendance, at least that's how we foresee it, and maybe that changes moving forward. I mean, again, LA is now proposing to host the NHL as one of the two hubs across the entire league there in the heart of California. But if it doesn't change and no fans are allowed, does it hit as hard to the fan where you're looking at it like this is a season where I wouldn't be able to attend anyway, so it doesn't affect me as much as it would with a financial investment of going to the ballpark as much as I'd like to, or making that summer trip with my family like I would normally do? Can't do it even if I wanted to.
I think people will be pissed, but I don't think it'll be like, what was it, 94 when 94. The season got called and there was no series. I don't think it'll be quite like that, because the initial problem in 94 was a labor issue that they couldn't resolve. It was self-inflicted. The initial issue here is the pandemic. Now, they should be able to resolve something anyway. But the thing that started this whole thing is out of everybody's control. And so, look, I'm going to be pissed if there's not baseball, if they could do it. And I'm going to be pissed that there's not a World Series this year. I'm going to be especially pissed because the Yankees were primed to be the team this year. They were primed to be the team in 94 with the Expos. And so this could cost my, you know, the 2 years without a champion could cost my team two championships. But I'm more sympathetic this year. I had no sympathy in 94.
Chad, here's my – I'm not saying it's going to be a nonchalant, no harm, no foul attitude from fans. People will be upset about it. But will people swear off the sport like they did in the mid-90s?
I'm skeptical about how many people actually swore off the sport, what percentage of people did that in the mid-90s. But I'm on the complete opposite side of you guys on this, because I think the pandemic makes this far worse for baseball fans. And follow along here. If the NHL, the NBA, the NFL, college football, college basketball, all these sports that would be playing around the same time baseball would be happening, if they all can come up with a plan to return to play, especially the pro sports, NHL, NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball is the lone sport that couldn't get their you-know-what together and come up with a plan to play, I think they have much more egg on their face than in 1994. I think more people, way more than in 94, will never forgive baseball for doing that in the midst of a pandemic that has led to 30 million unemployed. If every other sport finds a way to continue and have playoffs and make it work, and baseball, our American pastime, is the one sport that can't come up with a plan, people will be pissed, and they will never forgive baseball for that. I'm on the complete opposite side. I think the pandemic would make it worse if they don't come up with a way to play, and every other sport can come up with a way to have some sort of season.
I also think it's interesting. We're talking about a different pool the pool of people who were diehard or into baseball in 94 versus now is obviously smaller. But I do think Chad touches on something there a little bit. The NBA and the NHL will be infiltrating baseball space July and August, which is typically the only thing going on really is baseball. And all of a sudden, there's not just a baseball void,
great point,
but there's basketball and hockey available to you. Now, and how much their schedules screwed up next year to where those leagues have to play somewhat into an elongated schedule where it would extend into baseball time, and how much is baseball then seeding its calendar? That would be my biggest concern, and I think maybe they need to think about that a little bit more. Hey, these are our prime months, and all of a sudden, we've got competition from two indoor sports where it's not hot outside and humid.
Well, and so think about the possibilities of the proposal for baseball, returning 4th of July weekend, let's say, and all the festivities you could have around that, even without fans in attendance. And people watching their favorite baseball team that weekend, and pre-produced television openings about the return to baseball and the American pastime in the midst of a pandemic, and people feeling great and emotional about baseball returning and watching it on television with their sons or their daughters or grandparents or whoever, and all of those good feelings. And then imagine that season doesn't happen because of greed. For a second, let's all envision that happen, because that's what this is. It's greed. No one, they do not care about health procedures. I'm sorry, I'm not buying that. The number one, Paul, the number one concern is greed. Players want to get paid.
If there's health concerns.
Owners want to get paid. They're using that as an excuse.
If they were
very few people, what percentage, Hutton, would you say of Major League Baseball players are legitimately concerned for their health and wouldn't play in a season because they're afraid of getting COVID-19?
That would not play based on their current salary.
They wouldn't play. Yes, if they came with, if they had
very
the money,
low percentage.
If they had their
very
current
low.
Salary prorated for the year and they could make bonuses, what very percentage low. Would then say, "I'm not going to do it, guys. I'm afraid of getting COVID-19." 5%, and I think I'm being generous when I say 5%. But let's imagine the season doesn't happen, and then let's imagine that next year, when every sport is back, Major League Baseball comes back and tries to make some big damn show about the opening of baseball and the return of baseball. Can you imagine the laughter from fans about, oh my gosh, thank you guys for coming back. Mike Trout, thank you for coming back for your $28 million to play baseball. What a gift this has been after not having it for a year, when the National Hockey League, the National Basketball Association, the National Football League decided they could come up with a way to deliver a product to their fans, and you couldn't. So thank you so much for coming back in 2021. I feel so American now that baseball's returned. I'll laugh at that, quite frankly, if they try to make any type of patriotic show about coming back to play in 2021. So they better get it done this year. They're going to lose a ton of fans. That's my prediction, way more than Kirby, who's the one guy I know that claims he hasn't watched baseball since 1994.
I don't think
he
has.
That was a huge Cincinnati Reds fan before. I don't know many. I'm sure there are a few. I don't know many people who actually stuck with that. I think a lot more people will stick with that after, if they don't play this year.
I think you're very flippant about the health stuff. Sean Doolittle, I think, is the one guy. He did a big thing. His wife's got respiratory problems. And I think you're dismissing these links to people who have the sorts of concerns that COVID could really mess with. I'm sure there are a couple guys in the league who have asthma or whatever, and it's a concern for them. But they have people at home who have health concerns that could screw things up, who they're going to be in contact with, kids, wives, parents, whatever, who they can't avoid being in contact with, who they would put at risk. And you're just sweeping that under the rug and not making it a consideration.
If the owners paid them their full salary, would they play?
I think for some of them, it would be a concern.
It's not that important to
them. I think for some of them, it would be a concern.
No. Okay. What percentage, Paul? Sean Doolittle. Who else?
I don't know.
For full salary, give me a percentage, I guess, of players.
It's been the topic in America, and you can name one player.
Under 10%.
If Major League Baseball came back and said, you know, we'll pay you for 162 games, all right? That's what we're going to pay you to play 82 games. How many Major League Baseball players then say, you know what? I've got a grandfather who's sick. I've got a wife who has respiratory problems. I'm not going to play baseball this year at my full salary. The answer is so small, which again leads to the point that the number one issue is money.
I'm not saying the number one issue isn't money, but I'm saying that there are some people for whom there is another issue, or it's on the list of issues. Then I don't think that's unreasonable.
Then those four players across Major League Baseball cannot play. But for the rest of them, they'll play if the money's right.
Yeah, the baseball will not be played if the money is not right for both sides. But baseball will be played if 5% of the league doesn't want to play because of coronavirus.
Well, sure, the league will go on as all the other leagues.
The league will go
on. But the other leagues are potting, by the way. They're potting for a reason.
Well,
the NHL isn't playing in their home stadiums the way Major League Baseball is planning on doing for a reason.
Yeah, but the NHL is considering California, Paul.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about that?
California, who is not going to have sports until 2021.
They're avoiding home stadiums, but they're going to California to play as one of their hub cities, as one of the favorites to land a hub city spot.
And they're worried about coronavirus? Which is odd, I agree. But if you don't think they're worried about coronavirus, why aren't they just playing regular?
Why are they going to California to play instead of Florida?
I don't know. But they are potting, so you can't say they're not concerned about coronavirus.
Paul, they're potting? They're potting to get there because they can't get into Canada. They can't do things in New York. But, I mean, it's laughable to me that Los Angeles, of all places, is one of the favorite spot landing spots to be a quote-unquote hub city in order to pod together from coronavirus.
It's laughable to me, too. And I don't know why that's come to be. It's a California issue. But we can't pretend
they've lowered their level of fear to the point where they're ready to host. That's what it means.
But they also, teams don't want to get on planes. They don't want to deal with hotels all over the country. It's all of that. All of those logistics are still very messy. And sure. I think baseball is willing to take on a lot of messy logistics that the NBA and the NHL is not willing to take on at this time.
I'll say it. I think it's good to be smart and responsible. I think most of these leagues are potting and doing all these things because they are afraid of being criticized for not caring about this disease and death. And I think that's the main reason. It's about liability. It's about the fear of criticism. I think most of these players would do whatever the league said if they gave them full salaries.
Well, is MLB being criticized for that? I don't hear any criticism for MLB potentially opening the way its plan is.
Well, MLB opening, what do you mean what their plan? The MLB is getting criticized because they're fighting over money. When 30 million people don't have a job, that's why they're getting criticized.
But they're not getting criticized for what their plan is for reopening when they reopen. East against East, Central against Central, West against West, traveling. Yeah,
they would travel some, flying some, bus rides, things like that. Nobody's bashing them
for the things you're saying the NHL and the NBA are trying to avoid getting bashed for.
But there's still the Sean Doolittles of the world who are going to say, I'm not going to get on a plane or I'm not going to get on a bus also. So there's still some criticism out there.
It's interesting from a league-to-league standpoint how it's being handled. And a part of the MLB looking so terrible yesterday and last night is because the NHL and Gary Bettman look so great in their plan. And, again, I thought it was well thought out with how they laid everything out there. And if they didn't have an answer for something, they have tabled it to a later date to discuss and then announce. Which I also appreciate. Instead of just saying, here's the plan and deal with it, things like exhibition games and other aspects of this schedule, first and foremost, you have to get the players here.
Yes.
And as a part of their plan, as a part of their league rule, if you have public transportation, and I mentioned this yesterday, it's an automatic 2-week self-quarantine.
So you got to get moving.
Yeah, that's why they announced it yesterday without having more details involved with it. Because the players that get here still have to wait another 2 weeks before they join their team at their facilities.
Big question for all of these leagues is, where are they getting all these tests? However frequently they're testing, I think there's a question it still seems like there aren't enough tests necessarily for everybody that needs them. And NHL is going to have the billion that they need.
There are more tests available than people asking for them, country, like coast to coast.
But the NHL is going to be able to get 1,100 or whatever they need per.
Yeah, because they're not being used right now. They could use them.
I'm not convinced that
the Washington Post reported there are more tests available than people asking for them. This was a report 2 weeks ago. And you're not convinced with that report?
Well, is that going to be the case after these leagues take up however many tests they're going to take up if a resurgence happens?
They're still making tests, too.
The fact is we've reached a point where we have more tests available than people asking for them, and we're looking in advance to August now. So give me two or three more months on the information we have now on testing. I like the way it's going. I'm not looking at it from a negative perspective that, how are leagues going to do it? I think they're looking at it like they're going to be plenty more tests by the time we actually want to test as much as we're going to.
All right, we'll see.
Supply goes up. Demand has continued to go down. So that's going to continue, and these leagues have plenty.
They're also choosing – we'll get to Doug Matthews in just a moment. Final point on this. They're also choosing markets, reading where you – there was at the NBA. The NBA was looking at markets where you had to have enough tests to cover all essential personnel in your county. In your county, meaning anybody that has boots on the ground, essential personnel to what you're doing, law enforcement, nurses, doctors, you have enough tests for all of them covered. And then you would have enough tests over that to cover the team aspect of it.
50 people per NHL team is also the number that would be your entourage.
Right. But, I mean, I don't know, Paul, how you look at the report from the Washington Post.
And I didn't see that.
That is a great – I sent it to you last week. We discussed it last week, and I mentioned it with Bill Schaffner, Dr. Bill Schaffner. There are more tests available than people actually going and physically asking to be tested.
Well, that's terrific if that's the case.
Doug Matthews next, Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. We always love Wednesdays because of the guest list in the lineup. Greg Cosell at 12:15, and prior to Greg joining us, Coach Doug Matthews. We go on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, who reminds you, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. There's no need to consult the playbook. The winning play is to always designate a sober driver. Doug, good morning. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well, thank you. Trust you all are, and, of course, the folks listening out there.
Yep. Everything's going well here, and going well for the SEC and college football in their return to play plans. The SEC voted last week on Friday to allow athletes to return on June 8th. And as you have stated for weeks, Coach, this gives every program plenty of time to prepare for the regular season. And if there's any doubt about that, how many days did you need to actually feel like, you know what, we're comfortable going into the regular season?
Well, I think before fall practice, they give you 30 days roughly of fall practice starting in August before the first game. This year, the first opening week is September 5th. That's a Saturday. Now, if you were opening before that and after, but roughly for almost all of the teams, it's September 5th, that weekend. You always would have about a month. Once they did away with two-a-days, a few years ago, used to have only 3 weeks to get ready. Now you have four. They added an extra week, so you got 30 days there. And most every team would bring back their players for the second semester of summer school, which started after July 4th, 6th, 7th, somewhere around in there. That was when it started. So what actually is happening now is you're actually getting another 4 or 5 weeks. If you start June the 8th, some started June the 1st. A few schools out there, a few conferences are letting the schools decide. I noticed where the Big 12, I think, at least some of them are coming back the 1st of July. But plenty of time, particularly for SEC schools, you got a whole month, the whole month of June to gradually acclimate players back into to conditioning and other things like that. So no, won't be any excuses if the season, whether the season starts on time or not, with these openings, nobody will have an excuse. However, they may have one, but it won't be a good one.
So if everything looks good in terms of preparing for the season from here on out, Coach, I want to ask you specifically about what was lost with a spring practice and the spring games that were lost for programs out there. What typically is accomplished during the spring, and for teams now moving forward in preparation starting on June 8th for the season, what exactly was lost with the coaching staff and what they can do with players during that spring practice time?
Well, two different issues here. Let's look at programs that had established coaches of two or more years. If you had been there two or more years leading into this spring, really not much. What spring, once you have your program going, spring, you've always heard me say this, spring's about individuals, not about the team, because you don't have a game at the end of spring. So the ones that would be hurt on this, again, the two different categories, but the one that already had programs established of a coach there two or more years, would be the younger players. If you had some early enrollees, almost every school does now, they miss that part of it. And it'd be the younger players trying to improve. Your players, your starters, your guys that have been around the program three or four years, they don't get all that much out of spring. Now, the programs that are going to get hurt is that other program. It's those ones. Four Southeastern Conference schools have new coaches this year, a little over a quarter of the schools, or right at a quarter of the schools, so a little over a third. They didn't have a spring. They needed that badly, so they're kind of going in. Yeah, they have a general idea from watching tape of last year and meeting with those players when they were back in school for those few short weeks. They're the ones that are going to get hurt the most, Chad. But overall, if you're an experienced program, a veteran program, a program that's been around for two or more years, not that much at all, really.
Doug Matthews with us, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Coming up, we'll get Doug's take on Tennessee recruiting positionless athletes and how it compares to Tennessee's just bottom line of what they need in recruiting right now through Jeremy Pruitt's planning. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue and Poncho and Lefty's. We are on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, who reminds you, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Designate a sober game plan. If you've been drinking, don't drive. The Tennessee Highway Safety Office reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. Doug, something we were discussing amongst the show, and involves Tennessee recruiting, is the positionless athlete. How did you go about recruiting those types of players? And what's the philosophy on Tennessee's coaching staff of getting a guy who's played practically everywhere in high school and then allowing him to just fit somewhere on your roster as a recruit?
You have to be careful. You have to know exactly what you're looking for, but certainly in the skill positions and somewhat in the line positions, but primarily in the skill positions, you love to have players who are not only multi-sport athletes, but also multi-position athletes on a football team. Maybe a quarterback and a defensive back, or a wide receiver and a defensive back, or a tight end that can play linebacker, all those different positions. That's what you're looking for. But again, you got to be careful on that and make sure you're not just getting an athlete, because you need football players too. What Tennessee has done lately, the last five or six players that they have committed, and again, these are just commitments, are those types of players. They have one player, one of the latest ones they got from North Carolina. He could be a H-back type player, could be a running back, could be a linebacker. The big tight end, defensive end, offensive tackle, defensive tackle that they just got committed, the latest one, 6'7", 250 kid, fits that bill also. So you are really looking for that, primarily at the skill positions. And I will say this, most of the really good skilled athletes that I personally recruited were multi-sport athletes. I can think of more than one, but one right here in Nashville, Tennessee, Corey Fleming. Corey was a quarterback in high school, a safety, and also an excellent basketball player. Matter of fact, we decided we were going to take him anyway, but after watching him play basketball, even more so. So that's, you know, you want those type of players. But again, you have to be very careful in doing that, that you don't recruit too many, quote, athletes and not enough athletes that are also really good football players.
And when we talk about positionless athletes, I say it because that's where recruiting analysts list them as the number five athlete in the country or whatever it may be, and guys who could play a lot of different positions in college. But, Coach, with what you know about Jeremy Pruitt and his entire staff, do you think these guys are really positionless when they're recruiting them? Or does Jeremy Pruitt, even if recruiting analysts don't know, Jeremy Pruitt typically knows exactly where he's going to plug those guys in and where they're going to be playing on day one?
No, you do know that, Chad. I'll give you a good example for Corey Fleming. I recruited Corey at the University of Tennessee at the time. I was a secondary coach and defensive coordinator. I was recruiting him as a safety. Now, I left after that year, and then he was moved and became an outstanding wide receiver. Carl Pickens is another example. I can give you a bunch of them. Al Wilson. You think Al Wilson wouldn't have been a good tailback, fullback, really anything position he wanted to play by and large. But, no, they have a really good idea. But what you try to do is, let's just take Tennessee's recruiting class because I know so much more about that than I do anybody else's. These last few, you know, they had about 18 or so, 17 or so specific position players. These last few, other than the quarterback position, have been players that could play multiple positions. And I'm sure, let's just take this last young man that they got a commitment, the big kid. They probably have a position. Maybe it's tight end. Maybe it's defensive end. Maybe it's offensive line. They have a position that they're looking at him at, but it's nice to have a guy that can kind of move around a little bit. Some of the very best Fulmer coach teams, their offensive linemen, everybody but the tackles, the two guards and the centers, were almost always players who were defensive type players that had the agility to play defense that moved offense, the Bubba Millers and guys like that. They had several of them, but most of their guards and centers, Harry Galbraith, most of those guys could play defense, but they were kind of over recruited in defense and moved offense and became outstanding offensive linemen.
News coming out of Iowa State, where the AD is preparing for limited fans at games this fall. And it's something we've talked about with the possibility with everything going on. But he's only selling, and Iowa State's only selling, season tickets right now. Their season ticket base is about 23,000. Their stadium holds 60,000. He's not selling any additional individual game tickets right now, and Iowa State isn't, because the thought is, from him and talking to people in college athletics, it's going to be half capacity for games. So let's just look at this from the Tennessee perspective. Let's say it's 50,000 people allowed in Neyland Stadium of the 100,000 that it holds. How does that affect the bottom line for a Tennessee and some of these other big programs? We know television money is very important for these conferences, but when you get into these bigger stadiums that sell a lot of tickets and make a lot of money off of it, how big of a hit could that be for these programs?
Well, it's going to make a dent in it, no doubt about that. I'm not exactly sure the wording of all the TV contracts. The ones that could have an accelerator in there if the ratings go up. And listen, let's say that, take any school. Let's say that 40,000 fans that normally come to games are not going to be there. You know that they and their families are going to be watching the game on whichever network it's on. So we saw this with the NFL draft. What was it, up 25% or so from the previous high the first night? And I think we'll certainly see that if fans are not allowed back in, or if there is a limit to those, we're going to see they're going to be watching the game somewhere. So that could be an accelerator. Again, I don't know the exact wording on the ESPN and SEC Network and the CBS and ABC and Fox for that matter, what those contracts are. But I will tell you this though, Chad, I think most of the athletic directors at Power Five schools, I know Tennessee is doing this right now, and I don't see them changing this. They're going to try to sell every season ticket they can sell. If they were selling 60,000 or 70,000, they're going to try to get those. And then, because that decision hadn't been made yet, and they'll tell you that right up front. We don't know right now how many fans, if any, are going to be allowed. So they're going to sell those season tickets, and then they'll, and I think most people who buy season tickets know that, hey, if we can't go, we'll just roll them over to the next year. If we want to get our money back, certainly that'll be a possibility to do that. They'll do that. But I think most of them will just roll it into next year. You know, kind of like very similar to what the NFL does, the Titans do, if it looks like they're going to make the playoffs late in the year and they sell playoff tickets, if it looks like they're going to get a home game. Very similar. You can get the money back or you can roll it into your next year's ticket prices.
Doug Matthews with us. Coming up, the Reggie Bush, who accepted money in college, had made some comments on players getting paid, the NIL. We will discuss the reaction to what Reggie Bush had to say. He was pummeled on Twitter over this and through ESPN's Bottom Line with the information he was putting out there, commenting about exactly what will happen to players getting paid and how he was against it just on the surface level. But Doug and I had a different reaction to what he said, and I'm curious if Paul and Chad agree. That's next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Doug Matthews with us here on 104.5 The Zone. He is presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. You can catch him each weekend, Saturday mornings, 9 a.m., Forklift System Sports Saturday. And every Sunday morning, the best hour-long discussion on Tennessee athletics is Big Orange Sunday, every Sunday at 8 a.m. right here on The Zone. Doug, what do you have coming up this weekend?
Well, going to start with the Dickey era with Bud Ford on Sunday. I contend that those six seasons that Doug Dickey was the athletic director, head football coach, not the athletic director. We're just going to hit the football part of it. I think if you look at in context in those 6 years, more things were installed, put in place there, including an outstanding football team that really accelerated the University of Tennessee tradition. We're going to get into that Sunday, things like running through the tee, the checkerboard end zone, tees on the helmet, just to kind of give a little starting place on that. So I think folks will enjoy that part of it. Hey, one thing before we get into the next topic, I did want to mention this on the ticket situation. Can you just imagine this? We're talking about home games now and in conference play. If they do indeed limit the number of people that can be in there, how many of that allotment of tickets to go, let's just say Tennessee and Florida, how many allotment of tickets do you think is going to go to the opposing team on that, if only it's only going to be half filled? So while it maybe won't be as many home fans percentage-wise or numbers-wise, there's going to be certainly going to be more percentage-wise, because you can bet those visiting tickets are going to go away pretty darn quickly.
Yeah, great point there. Reggie
Same
Bush,
percentage, right? You would think if the whole stadium's half, the visiting percentage would be half. I would have to think. Then it becomes a hot ticket on the secondary market. You have to wonder about the secondary market with this whole thing.
No, they'll get their allotment, but what they will not be able to do is buy tickets that were unsold, because there's not going to be any unsold tickets. Now, if a fan wanted to sell, there's absolutely. But normally there's tickets available at almost every venue that the opponent's fans can come in and buy. That's when you see them in other areas, except right normally where the band is. But that'll go away completely, because those tickets, there won't be any available tickets. And it should be a great time if people want to sell their tickets, if you're only going to have half the attendance there. Again, though, that's well down the line. That has not been established yet.
Doug, if you just read the Bottom Line at ESPN television over the weekend, you saw where Reggie Bush was against the pay for play with the NIL for players. And when you read that at the Bottom Line, it comes across as terrible, because Reggie Bush commenting on players getting paid, and he's grilled over the coals because he accepted money while at USC. But instead of ripping the guy after reading ESPN's Bottom Line on TV, if I'm making plans for name, image, likeness, I would want to hear what primetime athletes of years gone by would have to say on this issue. And Reggie Bush may be one of those right players to actually hear from on this. And I thought his comments were actually very well thought out, where he said that guidance is the one thing that young athletes coming through the college system miss out on so much. I missed on it. They're about to start paying college athletes. This is something that has never been experienced before, and it's going to destroy some people if their foundation is not in the right place. If I'm on a committee that's trying to determine name, image, likeness, and what goes to the player and what doesn't, players in the past that have accepted money would be on my list to call and ask questions to about hurdles that would be presented their way that I haven't thought of. I would want to hear from Reggie Bush on this.
That's a great point. You know, as I become more experienced, which is just another word for getting older, I was pretty much a fly by the seat of my pants, fly off the handle and do things pretty quickly, and then calm down a little bit. But I've really tried to, when I read a quote or hear just a quote, I try to dig into it a little bit deeper if I'm interested. And that was one of those. Reggie Bush, as I've listened to him, there's several other, I think, examples of this, but he's an example of somebody who, whether he made a mistake or whatever, the fact of the matter was that Southern Cal was put on probation because of his situation there, whatever it was. I don't know enough about it to talk about that, but they were put on probation. But as I've heard him talk, I like the way he analyzes things, and I also like this particular instance, and I think you're exactly right. You need to have people, whether it's coaches, whether it's players, maybe even agents involved in this, to say, hey, here's the pitfalls. And what I read Reggie Bush trying to say, and I'm sure there's others out there saying the same thing, I just haven't read them yet, is, hey, this is going to happen, so why don't we try to teach these young men some of the pitfalls? And I think he mentioned in there being able to, save money or put money aside. Are you going to have to pay taxes? Probably so. So that, I think, was the direction he was trying to go in. When I listen to him when he talks, he's one of the analysts I listen to from that perspective. He was an outstanding high school, college, pro player, had some problems he had to dig his way out of, and he's done that. So I think you're right on that. And I think there's more people out there. Just this thing is going to happen. The NIL is going to be there. They got a reprieve because of the suspension of practices and things like that, schools. But this is going to happen, so they better have all their ducks in a row. It's going to happen in January, and if they're not ready for it by then the federal government, the Congress, is probably going to step in, and the NCAA is not going to like it. So the ball right now is squarely in the NCAA and the conference's court. They can either get this thing handled the way it should be, or they can get forced into something that they'll probably be complaining about for the next decade.
One aside on Reggie Bush, Hutton, he has no idea how the media works. And as a guy who's technically in the media, he had huge protest with ESPN for quoting his quote from Playboy, as if he said, I didn't talk to you, you can't use that, with a complete lack of understanding how one media outlet could use his quote to another media outlet. I thought it was a really embarrassing display.
But in searching out the quote myself, he was right. It was taken out of context.
Well, he could complain about the context, but to complain that they're using his quote and he didn't talk to ESPN, so they can't talk about his Playboy quote, is the wrong complaint. Anybody can use anybody's quote.
I have a bigger issue with ESPN saying that he's not for pay for play, when in fact he is. He's just going through the circumstances of what he faced and what he thinks these players will face with money being thrown at them.
Well, you should be able to frame your complaint. Hey, you're using the wrong context on what I said. ESPN should be able to do it without a
sentence at the bottom of a screen the way they did it.
I agree with all of that, but he's saying you can't talk about my quote to Playboy, which is ridiculous. Anybody can talk about anybody's quote to anybody. He ought to know that.
They took it way out of context, I felt like. And normally, I roll my eyes whenever a player says that. But in reading the article, I mean, he's a guy I would want to talk to and be on a committee with on this. Seriously.
I don't have any objection to what he said. I think he's right. I don't disagree with your overall point here. And
I didn't know Playboy was still in the game.
Yeah, a ton of people are not ready for what's to come. Yeah, you got it for the articles, right?
Yeah, I read the articles there.
Doug Are there Matthews. Still naked people in Playboy? Didn't they back away from that? Or then they came back? They realized what their main function was.
Doug, we just read it for the articles. Doug, thank you as always. Always a fast hour with you, and we look forward to this weekend's content on The Zone.
You bet. Thank you.
Doug Matthews has been our guest. Coming up, we'll get back into the NHL and the playoff scenarios, the formats that have been laid out there. David Poile weighed in on this proposal whenever he joined us last week, and we discussed everything from his thoughts on the 2014 playoff format to players it could actually benefit on his roster from this time off. We'll hear from David Poile next. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.